The Christian State of Life, or Sermons on the Principal Duties of Christians in General in their Different States in Particular, with Father Francis Hunault, preacher in the Cathedral of Treves. Copyright 1886. On Jealousy in the Married State, preached on the second Sunday after Easter. He delivered himself to him that judged him unjustly. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23, from the Epistle of the Day. Dearly beloved, Christ has suffered for us, leaving an example that you should follow his steps. Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth. Who, when he was reviled, did not revile. When he suffered, he threatened not, but delivered himself to him that judged him unjustly. So far, St. Peter in today's epistle. My dear brethren, how beautiful it would be for us Christians if we all lived together according to the example of our model, Jesus Christ. What a happy thing, especially for a married couple, if one knew how to give way to the other. Certainly, peace and union would then be much better preserved, as we have seen already. There is yet another thing that causes much trouble and uneasiness. And what is that? Where the peace and quiet of the married state are not disturbed by quarreling and contention, they often are by rash judgments and secret injurious thoughts on one side or the other. And that occurs when one suspects the other of being unfaithful. Therein consists a jealousy that is often found amongst married people. What jealousy is, and what great mischief it works in the married state, I will briefly explain in the first part. How married people are to guard against it, and how one is to act if the other is infected with it, I will explain in the second part of my instruction. Jesus Christ, who gave us thyself up in silence, patiently and meekly, to the unjust judgments of wicked men, give thy grace to all married people, they may never give cause for such evil judgments, or after thy example, may learn to bear them with patience. This we ask of thee through the merits of thy mother Mary and of the holy angels guardian. As worms and moths grow in clothes and eat them away, little by little, so jealousy grows out of love and, like a gnawing worm, eats it away and changes it into hatred. Jealousy is a mental disease which comes from the fear that we have of another getting possession of something that we have and wish to keep for ourselves. The least interference with the object of our affection disturbs and disquiets the heart and mind exceedingly. Nothing is more common in the world, among all states and conditions, than this malady. The general loves honor and reputation for bravery and heroic actions. A young officer is fortunate enough to vanquish the foe frequently and thereby makes a name for himself. And the general at once grows jealous of the young man and cannot bear him, although the latter has conquered the enemies of his country. The praise that the officer gets grates on the ears of the other, or thinks that his own fame and reputation will suffer thereby. Thus Saul, who formerly loved David, hated him at last so much that he tried to take his life, and the sole cause of his hatred was the jealousy he felt when he heard the people singing in David's praise. Saul slew his thousands, and David his ten thousands. A courtier is jealous of his fellow courtier, on account of the favor and grace of the prince, which he would wish to have for himself alone. One lawyer is jealous of another who gets more cases than he does. A doctor is jealous of another who is more successful in curing disease. A merchant is jealous when he sees another making more profit. A tradesman is jealous of another who possesses more skill in his handicraft. Jealousy is found amongst musicians, painters, and sculptors on account of their art, amongst parents on account of their children and their beauty, cleverness, and talents, amongst women on account of greater magnificence in dress, amongst students on account of the highest places in the schools, in private houses amongst children, if one of them is more caressed by his parents than the other. So unruly and so unmanageable does the love of a thing become when there are many aspiring to the possession of it. But there is no state in which this fell disease is more easily introduced and develops more quickly into a mortal illness than in the married state, and that is because the husband and wife, or either of them, who become infected with that malady, have a twofold instead of a single love, and that love is a very earnest one indeed. The husband, for instance, and the same may be said of the wife, loves himself and his own possessions best, and next to himself he loves his wife as one who belongs to him alone. Hence comes his ardent desire to be alone loved by her, and a great fear and anxiety lest she should share her heart with others or conceive an aversion for him. If he sees only the least sign of that, he suspects her of being unfaithful and is much grieved and distressed thereat. This fear, suspicion, and distress are a real mental disease and constitute what is called jealousy. How much mischief this malady causes! In the first place, it grievously torments the heart that suffers from it. Hardly any heavier cross can be found in the married life. Imagine, my dear brethren, a grisly monster with 100 eyes and ears always open, so as to see and hear everything, and whatever he sees and hears tortures him most cruelly. Imagine that you see a lot of gloomy, melancholy thoughts and suspicions going in and out of the mind, day and night, without ceasing, like ants in their hill, or wasps in their nest. That is a picture of the heart and mind of a jealous husband. He believes that all his suspicions of his wife are true, that all that he dreads is actually occurring. He watches her every step and movement. He suspects all that she says or does in presence of others. Even if she goes to church or says her prayers, he puts a wrong construction on it. And if he cannot detect any outward proof of unfaithfulness, his suspicions and fears sink all the deeper into his mind and cause him unspeakable torture. But there is no use in describing this any further. They who suffer from it know by experience what a torment it is. Ah, yes, temporal losses, misfortunes, poverty, sterility, trouble with children, sickness, illness, and death of children, an ill-tempered husband, an obstinate wife, worthless servants, and other trials of that sort which afflict the married state, all these things are easy to bear in comparison with the heart gnawing disease, jealousy. No matter how courageous and brave a man may be in bearing all changes of fortune, if he once begins to suspect his wife of being unfaithful, his courage is gone from him. No matter how pious and good a wife may be, and how resigned in bearing crosses and trials, if she grows jealous of her husband, her patience and meekness are turned into fury and wrath, as the wise Ecclesiasticus says. A jealous woman is the grief and mourning of the heart. With a jealous woman is a scourge of the tongue, which communicateth with all. The spouse of the Canticles likens his feeling to the pains of hell. Jealousy is hard as hell. Hence, amongst other evils, arise discord, strife, and in place of ardent love, and implacable hatred between the married pair, along with all the sins and vices which, as we have seen before, this union causes in the married life. For how can the husband look kindly on her whose love and fidelity he doubts? And how can the wife love him who is so suspicious and has such a bad opinion of her that he watches her every movement? She will certainly begin to distrust her husband before long and to believe that he is subject to the faults he suspects her of. Thus, although she may have been innocent, honorable, and faithful before, she will now venture on things that she would not have dreamt of doing at first. It is against this that Ecclesiasticus warns all husbands, "Be not jealous over the wife of thy bosom, lest she show in thy regard the malice of a wicked lesson." That is, as Father Cornelius Alapide says, that she may not really become what she sees you suspect her of being. The world has had terrible experiences of the effects of this passion. There have been women whom jealousy worked up to such a pitch of fury that, in order to be revenged on their husbands for suspecting them of unfaithfulness, they tore their own children to pieces before their husbands' eyes and cast them at their feet, as we read of Medea. There have been women who, through jealousy of their husbands, cooked their children and served them up at table, nor did they say a word of what they had done until their husbands had unsuspectingly eaten the horrid repast, as the prophet writes of Broglie. Almost all separations of married people have their origin in jealousy. Unhappy indeed is the married life when this fury invades it. And how wicked are you, miserable scandalmongers, agents of the devil, who delight in telling what you have seen or heard to husband or wife, so as to awaken the suspicions of either and kindle the flame of jealousy between them, a flame which can hardly ever be extinguished afterwards. Christian married people, do all you can to guard against these wicked and mischievous tale-bearers. Love each other constantly with a true Christian love, which never suspects evil of the beloved one, as St. Paul says. Love suspects no evil. But how are you to act so that this vice may not find place in your hearts? This I will tell you in the second part. Since either of the married couple can give the other occasion for jealousy and suspicions, so both are bound under pain of sin to avoid everything that could give reasonable cause for uneasiness. You must not pour oil on the fire, or it will blaze up more furiously. If a cloud comes before the sun, it intercepts his rays, and the earth is in darkness. Therefore, the wife must be particularly cautious in this respect if she sees her husband inclined to be very sensitive, and must carefully avoid all dangerous and suspicious company. The goddess of impure love was once represented by a painter as going on a journey, accompanied by a maid who prepared the way for her mistress. And what sort of a maid was that? Her name was Companionship, and the painter wished to signify thereby that the way is prepared for impure love by being too free and unrestrained in the choice of one's company. Alas, what mischief and sin this unhappy maid occasions among young people of both sexes, who are allowed to see, hear, and speak, laugh, and dance with each other without any restraint in modern society. And what mischief she works also amongst even married men and women. There is danger for wives even in the society of those of their own sex, if they are vain and frivolous, and a sensitive or suspicious husband could readily find cause for uneasiness therein. For according to the well-known axioms of philosophers, birds of a feather flock together. And a Spanish proverb says, tell me your company, and I will tell you what you are, although I may not have had any previous knowledge of your character. There are women who like to show by their independence and by their imprudent manners that they have the upper hand of their husbands. Such women are fond of going out. They frequent all sorts of company without caring whether their husbands like it or not. They set themselves up as teachers without being asked to do so and undertake to instruct newly married wives. In what? Here are the beautiful lessons they give. You must not allow yourself to be shut up at home. I will not let my husband do that. You must show that you have something to say. You must be like the rest of the world, or it would have been better for you to have entered a convent. Wherever you go, you must amuse yourself, or else people will think you want to play the wiseacre, etc. You who frequent such company should know well enough that you're either already infected with the spirit of it, or that you soon will be. Consequently, you give your husbands, if they are sensitive, sufficient cause to suspect your love and fidelity. Much more should wives avoid free intercourse, and especially solitary interviews, with persons of the opposite sex, no matter who they are. For no matter how innocent such intercourse may be, no matter how innocent it may always remain, still, when it is renewed frequently and without necessity, it gives food for suspicion, not only to the husband, but also to the other members of the household, although they may not be of a suspicious disposition. They also frequently give cause for uneasiness by being too vain and frivolous in dress, especially when they appear so in company. For young, unmarried women to act thus, and dress beyond their means and station, is certainly very wrong and opposed to the humility of the gospel, no matter what anyone says to the contrary. Yet there may be a certain excuse for them, inasmuch as they are looking for someone whom they would be willing to please. Merchants are accustomed to polish up their goods and make them look well, so as to be rid of them all the sooner. But for a married woman, who has already entered on a state of life in which she should seek to please her husband and no other, to give way to vanity in dress, and that not at home either, where her husband alone could see her, but in company and amongst strangers. Such conduct must certainly appear very suspicious to a respectable and honorable man. Above all, they should have pity and the fear of the Lord, and give their husbands an example therein. The pious are never thought ill of, while on the contrary, they who are cold in the divine service, worldly in their lives, careless in their devotions, neglectful of confession and holy communion, and remiss in hearing sermons, easily give reason to think that, as they do not serve the Lord their God faithfully, so also they are wanting in fidelity to their husbands. Finally, they must always be friendly and loving towards their husbands, so as to give a proof of the love and affection they have for them. If a wife is always gloomy, unfriendly, and distant with her husband, how can he think anything good of her? At least he must doubt the sincerity of her love for him, so that if he loves her as he ought, he will be filled with distressing and anxious thoughts. Sometimes wives complain that their husbands are jealous, that they are too sensitive, that they are always on the watch, that they keep them shut up like nuns in the house, that they never allow them any amusement or society unless in their presence, etc. But we might easily ask those who make that complaint, and how do you behave? Perhaps your conduct is such that your husbands have good reason to mistrust you. Examine yourselves and see whether you have not erred in some of the particulars mentioned already. If that is the case, it is no wonder, indeed, that your husbands are jealous. They would act stupidly and unreasonably otherwise. If the wife is bound in conscience to avoid and shun everything that could give her husband reasonable cause for jealousy, so also is the husband equally bound to refrain from everything that might give just grounds of suspicion to his wife. And his obligation is even stronger because, generally speaking, her love is much more sensitive and more exposed to the danger of suspicious fears and jealousy. Ulpianus says that when a wife is accused of being unfaithful to her husband, the judge first tries to find out what sort of a life her husband leads. For it seems to be very unjust that a man should require in his wife a purity which he himself does not observe. The same thing may be said here. It is useless and unjust for a man to keep his wife locked up at home while he himself goes about as he pleases, day and night, without having any business to transact that would necessitate his absence from home. It is useless for him to expect her to be humble, modest, and reserved in company, and not to be too friendly with persons of the other sex, while he acts in the opposite way and allows himself the greatest freedom in his conduct and conversation with other women. And that is, unfortunately, only too often the case. The poor wives must sit down quietly and look on, their cheeks burning with shame. It is useless and unjust for him to forbid all her conversations with strangers, unless in his presence, while he is altogether too free in his manner and conversations, even with his own female servants, although his wife is looking on and must feel troubled and distressed. It is useless and unjust for him to expect her to meet him always with a smiling countenance, while he is stern, gloomy, and harsh in his manner to her. To no purpose does he require her to be pious and devout, in order that she may give no cause for suspicion. If he himself leads a loose, unchristian, and scandalous life, and thereby gives her good reason to doubt his fidelity, no, as far as this matter is concerned, the wife has just as much right as the husband. They must both be, therefore, very careful to avoid everything that is likely to cause suspicion. Married Christians should herein follow the example set them by the bridegroom and bride of the canticle. What is that? As the lily among thorns, says the bridegroom of his bride, so is my love among the daughters. Thorns prick and wound if one lays hold of them incautiously, and therefore they must be handled carefully. The lily is held in high esteem as the queen of flowers. The meaning, then, of the bridegroom is, and all husbands should be of the same opinion, I honor my bride as the most beautiful flower. I look upon all other women as so many thorns that I cannot touch without being wounded. And how does the bride speak? She says, as the apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. That is, I consider my bridegroom alone as the fruitful apple tree that adorns the garden of our household. All other men, rich and poor, old and young, beautiful or deformed, I look upon as wild trees of the forest, which are at such a distance that they can hardly be seen. If all married people followed this example, what peace, good understanding, confidence, and mutual love would be found in the married state. Meanwhile, it often happens the wife or the husband gives way to jealousy without any reasonable cause and shows it by an anxious fear. What is to be done then so as to preserve peace and unity? Both must have a sincere compassion for each other and think that the fear and anxiety are not the result of malice or treachery, but, as is really the case, of a too ardent love that one has for the other. The husband has great reason to rejoice that his wife esteems him so highly that she desires to possess his whole heart and is troubled at the bare thought of a stranger having any share in it. And similarly, the wife with regard to the husband. They must rejoice, too, at the preservation of conjugal chastity, of which jealousy is an almost certain sign. For if the wife, for instance, were unfaithful, she would not be much distressed if her husband acted coldly towards her. So, also, the husband would not trouble himself much about his wife if he were involved in an impure attachment. Finally, in order to avoid this dangerous and loathsome disease, remember the warning and the commandment of Jesus Christ our Lord. Judge not. Think no evil of each other. We must look upon our neighbor as good and pious until we know for certain that he is wicked. Such is the Christian law and the true foundation of Christian charity. It is proclaimed to all men, but especially to married people, with regard to each other. Therefore, put away all fears and suspicions, and treat them as mere bugbears of the imagination, as in truth they generally are. The earth is motionless to a healthy eye, but to a diseased one it appears to tremble. Put the best meaning on everything that you hear of, see, and remark on each other, as every Christian is obliged to do with regard to his neighbor's actions. If you are sometimes troubled with suspicions of your husband or wife, remember the words that Christ addressed to the Pharisees, who used to interpret everything in a bad sense. Why do you think evil in your hearts? Do not listen to scandalmongers, who blow sometimes hot, sometimes cold from the same mouth, when, under the appearance of intimacy or friendship, they tell one of you something suspicious they have seen or remarked in the other. Never be too curious in inquiring into each other's conduct, for as the proverb says, he who asks many questions gets many different and disagreeable answers. He who is too anxious to know everything will find out a great deal that he would rather not know and will cause himself much trouble and uneasiness. Plutarch tells us of a laudable custom among the Romans. When a married man was returning from a journey, he used to send on a servant in advance to let his wife know that he was coming. This custom was a prudent one, because it put a stop to all groundless suspicions, and it saved the husband from unpleasant surmises, which he certainly would have had if on his return he had not found things as they ought to be. Alfonso, King of Spain, used to say, "Then only will the married state enjoy peace and quiet when the husband is deaf and the wife blind." What? A deaf man and a blind woman would certainly make a beautiful pair. Yet, so it is. If the husband pays as little attention as if he were deaf to what his wife says to others, and to what others say of her, and if the wife acts as if she had no eyes to see where and with whom her husband goes, and thus they mutually refrain from suspicious investigations into each other's conduct and always put the best interpretation on it, then they will both enjoy undisturbed peace. And St. Jerome says to a jealous husband, and wise may make a similar application of his words, What is the good of the jealous care with which you look after your wife? What is the use of it? If she is good and pure, your care is not necessary. If she is not, it will not cause her to amend. Why do you then torture yourself? Balaam taught Jehoshaphat a similar lesson by means of the following fable. A man once caught a nightingale and was about to twist its neck. "Oh," cried the bird, "spare my life, and in gratitude I will give you a piece of advice that will often help you during your life." "Tell it me," said the man, "and I will give you your liberty." Always be careful of three things. Never try to catch a thing that will not let itself be caught. Never believe a thing that is not probable. Never bewail a loss, good, which you can never recover. The bird was then set free, but no sooner had it recovered its liberty than it perched upon a tree and spoke thus to the man. "Oh, you poor simpleton, what have you done? What a great fortune you have lost! For if you had killed and kept me open, you would have been a rich man for the rest of your life, since I have a pearl as big as the egg of an ostrich in my body." "Alas," said the man, "would that I had known that at first. Come with me to my house. I will give you a hearty welcome and the best of food." The bird then laughed at him and said, "What a stupid man you are to forget my advice so soon. Is it likely that I could have such a large pearl in my small body? Why do you believe it then? Do you think I would allow you to catch me a second time? Why do you try to do so? You have lost me and cannot have me again. Why do you bewail a loss for which there is no help?" I conclude with the same exhortation to you, married Christians, and I say, is your husband, O wife, or your wife, O husband, true to you in conjugal love? Then never believe nor fear that this fidelity will be shaken, for it is not likely that such will ever be the case. Is either of you too incautious and free in conduct? Then the other must not be too anxious and jealous, for such care would be fruitless and profit nothing. Are you certain that you have been betrayed? Then do not trouble nor distress yourself too much about it, but commend yourself to God. For what is done cannot be undone by any amount of grief or sorrow. Love each other with firm confidence. Select as your patrons that most holy married pair, Mary and Joseph. Although the latter was troubled about his spouse, yet, according to the Holy Fathers, he never gave way to an evil thought about her, but submitted his reason to a mystery that he could not understand. That he had the idea of sending her away privately arose, as the same Holy Fathers say, from the fact that he was a just man, a title which the sacred scripture gives him, and therefore he wished to obey the law. Love your God constantly and serve him truly, and there will be no jealousy between you, and you will preserve peace, union, quiet, and heartfelt love until you both see each other in the city of heavenly peace. Amen.